Hello and welcome to the podcast previously known as ADHD Science, now known as ADHD UK podcast, if that makes sense. My name is Max Davey.
And my name is Lauren Jennings.
So some of you, the more perceptive of you, will have noticed that the second voice on this podcast is no longer Tess. Tess is now doing her undergraduate degree in psychology and she's just not here, basically, and she doesn't want to do it remotely. So Lauren has very kindly we were talking about it and Lauren has joined the podcast to see where things go. Lauren, do you want to introduce yourself, because the content of today is essentially your story and my story leading up to where we are now as a podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Lauren. I have been a part of ADHD UK as a volunteer in the ambassadors group for nearly 3 years. And recently I became a trustee back at the end of last year for ADHD UK, which is really exciting. So I was actually diagnosed with ADHD at 25 years old, so 4 years ago. And before diagnosis, I struggled a lot, especially with disorganisation, social connections, my emotional dysregulation. And I didn't really know what was happening. I was always told that I would seem to grow out of the emotions that I was feeling, which is actually quite negative looking back at that. But as soon as I found out about ADHD, especially within women, from the research that came to light, I straight away sort of knew that I had ADHD, and so did my family. And it was actually my family that were like, you know what, Lauren, we think you might have ADHD. And then I was like, yep, I think so too. So after going for my diagnosis, it was literally like a light bulb moment. And ever since then, I've been wanting to create change for other people because of my own lived experiences.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll sort of jump straight into your story, really. It's a great summary. How did it all start for you in terms of ADHD? Because you were sort of bumping along and you've told me some things before about how things were quite difficult. What was the thing that kind of made you think, huh?
So some of the things that actually came out about ADHD in women, especially sort of the more information that came out, especially around COVID time. So some of the things that I constantly struggled with, which was especially actually friendships and relationships and those social communication barriers that I always thought were just me. I just thought that everyone, had those difficulties. Everyone was the same. And actually, when it comes to relationships, and not just sort of romantic relationships, but also friendships and with the people around me, the people that I lived with, I was constantly deemed as messy. I'd leave a trail everywhere that I went behind me. And again, I thought that that was an everyone thing, but it turns out that it's not. But it was mainly the friendships and relationships. And I think for me, some of the things that I really struggled with was keeping those friendships and relationships, because I didn't always understand, social constructs the same way that someone else would, forgetting birthdays, forgetting large events. And it was obviously never intentional, but to someone that maybe not neurodivergent or have an understanding, like myself, I didn't have an understanding at the time. I couldn't understand why I couldn't retain information like everyone else. But once I did find out about ADHD, I was then able to advocate for myself, which then made me want to advocate for others.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because you said relationships wasn't a big problem before you were diagnosed. What was it about the diagnosis that improved your relationship? Because, of course, we haven't got a pill for that. Do you see what I mean?
Of course.
Or any kind of therapy for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. One of the things that I actually was able to do was advocate for myself. So the more I learned about ADHD, so I had no clue what emotional dysregulation even meant. I really didn't know much about it at all. I didn't know much about ADHD at all. But the more I researched, the more I found out, and I was able to then explain to my family, explain to my friends, what that emotional dysregulation actually meant for me on a day-to-day basis. Not just from a fact, but from a feeling perspective of the emotions that I actually feel when I am, in a I wouldn't say meltdown mode. I've struggled with that previously. I say previously, it's still something that happens more internally rather than externally.
Oh, I see.
But then I can also, you know, sidetrack. So if I'm thinking about something and I'm overheated in my brain, then I won't be focusing on whatever event is happening, whatever is happening for other people. And sometimes that can seem a little bit selfish, but it's not intentional. And it's actually something I was able to explain.
I know, it's terrible. Meetings, particularly meetings online, if they're not one-to-one or very short, very small numbers, I just drift off. I just can't.
Absolutely. It's one of the things that I never realised that could even be a reasonable adjustment in the workplace was around sort of shorter meetings, and especially when it comes to events, you know, knowing when to say, you know, I need to go now. And social battery draining is something that I've discovered since knowing about ADHD. And it's now something that I'm able to protect, and I've felt a lot better for it.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting. It's you understanding your limits and almost giving yourself forgiveness for the fact that not everything will go according to plan socially when you have ADHD, and other people forgiving you for that as well. It doesn't just having the diagnosis isn't going to take away those social mistakes or those awkwardness, you know, those awkward moments. It isn't.
100%, and I didn't realise how much, you know, being a woman and hormones and having ADHD, you know, the cycles. I didn't really understand much about that. But since knowing more information about the actual science part of it, I'm now able to give myself more understanding, which helps me.
I think it's a. I mean, it's an area where I think the science of ADHD is pretty strong compared to a lot of kind of mental health science, for instance. But I think the science of particularly around sort of hormonal influences, the menstrual cycle, all of that stuff is such an early stage. So you went from a diagnosis to volunteering for us very, very quickly, it's fair to say.
I absolutely did. And one of the reasons that I actually found out about volunteering about charity work was because I've been a part of something called pageantry. And it wasn't actually I started.
That's pageantry in the sense of beauty pageants, not pageantry in the sense of the queen riding around on a horse. Just to be clear about that. you weren't one of those soldiers with a big hat.
No, I wasn't. But I was a mace bearer for a mayor.
Oh, so are you?
That's very what cool. My job has been for the past 3 years. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Was that just bearing the mace? Did you have any other duties?
I carried the big gold stick and I supported the mayor.
Presumably you weren't doing, this is a bit of a sidebar, but presumably you weren't doing that every day.
No, only at large events. I've done it through Westminster Abbey.
Oh, amazing. No, that really would be amazing.
Yeah, so I have almost been in pageantry, not really, but that.
Yeah. Anyway, you're a beauty pageantry anyway.
So through that, I was able to get more confidence. But previous to actually even pageantry, I started to speak about my own lived experience online, which then transcended with that newfound confidence into wanting to advocate further. And then I found out about ADHD UK when I was sort of first going through my diagnosis, so I really wanted to get involved. But after being a part of pageantry, I was then able to utilise that confidence into applying to become an ambassador, and also seeing the things that were happening at the time, you know, in terms of ADHD, in terms of the medication shortage.
Yeah, that was that time, wasn't it?
Going on. It was a lot. So I thought, you know what, I can really get involved and make a difference here. And that's when I then become an ambassador and met Henry and then become a lead ambassador.
Yeah. So it's probably worth explaining for the listeners what an ambassador is in a sort of ADHD UK sense. It's not much to do with the Ferrero Rocher kind of, you know, ambassador's reception. It's a very important job and a very important part of the organisation, actually.
Absolutely. Ambassadors are at the heart of ADHD UK, I believe, because they are fundraisers. So obviously ADHD UK's pillars of information, research, support, awareness and advocacy are at the heart of everything that we do in terms of fundraising. So
ambassadors have done things such as skydives to charity events that are not as thrilling, but also just as impactful, such as, you know, like karaoke nights. I know I've done a few as well, and they've been quite good. And then we also are in the media talking about our lived experiences, and
I think that's right.
Yeah.
You, the ambassadors not only raise money, and now obviously we have no kind of big support. We've got no government support, no industry support. We rely on small donations. So the ambassadors are really important financially, but also they represent us. They represent the community in their areas and online. So they're an absolutely vital part of how we kind of grow our presence and stay viable within. You know, it's a very tough world out there for charities,
absolutely,
particularly for ADHD at the moment, which we'll return to. So you became the lead. When did you become the lead ambassador?
It was pretty much straight away.
Do you have a crown?
I have a pageant crown.
You should have a lead ambassador crown to go with your pageant crown. That's what we need to do.
I'll wear my ambassador badge. I think that'll be
all right. That's fine. Yes, you do get a badge. I forgot about that. I don't get a badge just for being a trustee.
No, get a badge for being an ambassador, not for a trustee yet.
No, we don't have those badges, but that's fine. Okay. And so, what are you hoping for out of what do you think ADHD should be doing? What should we be doing as a community? What are you hoping for the future from ADHD and ADHDers?
I think that in terms of awareness, a lot of us have been advocating and using our voices for change. And I think that the next sort of phase is gaining more understanding, especially within corporate worlds, especially within, you know, different streams of the everyday, I believe. Because the more understanding we have, we then go into that acceptance phase. And that's where we really need to be, you know, to accept that everyone, even if they do have ADHD as individual, and ADHD is something that affects the everyday life of an individual.
I think that's right. And it's all spheres. It's not just health or education. And I think that, you know, Henry's been very good. I think Henry's been, you know, at the very forefront of the getting that sort of awareness into the corporate world. I take no credit at all for any of this. I think it's an interesting time to be saying that, because, of course, I think we're at the point of a little bit of a backlash with some of the things that have been in the news, which I think is it's a moment of real peril, I think, because if that backlash gets embedded, then we could really find a lot of the progress that we've made going into reverse in the next few years. I worry about, essentially, just politically and culturally, we'll start to be dismissed again.
I think sometimes, you know, if someone had broken their arm, for example, you can physically see that their arm is broken. If it's something physical, you can actually see it. But whereas a lot of us throughout our lives are masked, because it's usually hidden, unless there's a situation where it becomes physically, you know, you're physically aware of someone's, you know, if they're emotional, if they're speaking about their experiences, then you can see it. But if you can't always see it, it doesn't mean it's not there. And that's what we do as ambassadors, as ADHD UK. We make the invisible visible.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, I think that the sort of the fad of any ADHD, the moment in the sun that we're enjoying will pass. But I think those people, the ambassadors and the people who are actually living it day to day, they will remain. So I sort of look forward to it being a bit less of a media darling in a sense, because then we can actually kind of just coalesce as a community, I think, a bit better.
Absolutely.
That's the idea anyway. All right. I think I've asked you most of the things I was planning to ask you. I think I was going to tell my story a little bit because you asked.
Absolutely.
Tess will be spitting because she's always threatened to interview me and I always refused. But here you go. Shall I just start? Where do you want to start?
If you could tell me about your story as to realizing that you do have ADHD in your journey to diagnosis.
Well, it's a tricky one, really. I think, I mean, in a way you have to sort of start in medical school in a way. I'd always been fairly annoying student, not, you know, I sort of worked hard towards the exams but not the rest of the time, and had been kind of gobby and sort of, you know, talking back a lot to lecturers and stuff. So I was hanging in there. And I think some of my colleagues, well, not colleagues, I say colleagues, that's such an old man thing to say. Some of my mates when I was at uni would, you know, would sort of pick whatever diagnosis that I would fit me when we were doing psychiatry. And it was all very funny. But there was even then a kind of jumping into things and a kind of, as you were saying, emotional dysregulation. And actually looking further back, I found some school reports from, obviously this was from the mid 80s, so a long time ago, actually early 80s. And it was all about the fact that I was losing my temper all the time. And if I had a less understanding, well, the deputy head was a particular friend to me, and he's now passed away, but he was a very good friend to my mum as well, actually. And he really just batted for me. I think if it wasn't for him, I might well have been kicked out. But there's, you know, and I think about that with the kids who I now look after as a paediatrician, who are in schools where there's no one batting for them. Maybe only needs one or two people, but if you have somebody who gets you in that environment, it makes all the difference. So sorry, coming back to, you know, when I realized I had ADHD. So then I went into pediatric training, having sort of got through my exams, and I sort of realized that I didn't really like hospitals that much, which is a bit unfortunate because I was training as a pediatrician. I just didn't like hospitals. So I started working in community pediatrics, which is the sort of developmental bit and a sort of child protection-y bit. And I became really, really interested in autism. I still think autism is a fascinating sort of neurotype. And I'm really pleased that I've always sort of slightly thought the way that we think of it now, the sort of neurodiversity movement. I've always sort of instinctively felt that about autistic people. So I'm really glad that that's sort of how we think about them now. But I think alongside that, I got very interested in ADHD. Oh, well, I got interested in ADHD basically because I had to do some ADHD because I wanted to study pediatric mental health essentially. And so I was trained by this wonderful man, Carsten Vogt, in Reading. And he was just fantastic. He was so inspirational. And he was an ADHD specialist. So I learned under him. I sort of started helping him with some of his ADHD caseload and just that found these kids absolutely fantastic. The patients absolutely fantastic. And really vibed with them, I suppose, would be how you'd put it. I just got on with them. I found it really easy to get on with these kids. Just naturally, I didn't need to have an effort to do so. And then Carsten had this thing called the QB check, which I think lots of people are now using. He was one of the first in the country, I think.
Wow.
Because this is now nearly 20 years ago. And he was, he said, well, why don't you have a go? Because it's really, you know, you need, if you're going to administer it and give it to your patients, you need to know what it's like. And let me tell you, it was the most boring 20 minutes of my life, because the QB is essentially like, it's just a screen, and either a circle comes up or a cross comes up. And if your cross comes up, you do not press. If the circle comes up, you press. And that's it. It's so boring for 20 minutes. So I really, because I want to say I failed the QB, but I would never allow my patients to say that ever. Don't fail the QB. But I showed strong indicators for ADHD. But so that for a while, I thought, well, okay, I've got that kind of brain. And I've always also thought this, you know, there's ADHD is comprised of two things. One is the sort of brain you've got, and then how much trouble that brain is causing you in your life. And that kind of brain you've got is just biology. That's just how it is. But the how much trouble it's causing in your life is bound up with your environment, which is why environmental stuff is really important in ADHD, although it's a biological thing, if that makes sense. So I thought, well, you know, I'm very privileged. I'm very lucky. I've got a great job and I've got a supportive family and work. And I'm fine. I'll be all right. Then I sort of wasn't. I sort of stopped being fine about 2019, just before the pandemic. And very, very lucky, got a very quick NHS diagnosis. I think I sometimes say facetiously, I was ADHD before it was cool. I think what I mean is I was ADHD before the rush. essentially, yeah. before it was known. Because of course I'm in a very good position to kind of work out what's going on. I was treating the condition at the time and still am. That was a fun moment, I think. I went onto medication for a bit. Now I don't take medication. I didn't get on with it. That's all right. I suppose that's how I became aware that I had ADHD. And for me, it's interesting listening to you because a similar thing happened. I sort of started to understand my behaviors. Even before I take medication, things started to get better because the people around me also understood why I was the way I was a little bit better. And yeah, things started to get better quite quickly after that. Although there have been some really significant ups and downs since that time, 6 years or
That's
so.
That's it, isn't it? It is like up and down, and it's almost sometimes like grieving parts of yourself. Like, you know, I really do resonate with a lot of what you've said, you know. I think as well, treating people with ADHD whilst also navigating your own journey to diagnosis. Could I ask you about how that was for you?
I don't think I really thought about it at the time. I've changed an awful lot over the last few years. I think now I would be able to reflect on it, but at the time I had relatively young children and a full-time job, and it was just something that I did. And I went round the corner. Weirdly, I got diagnosed within about 200 yards of my house because they happened to be running a clinic so literally I just walked around the corner, met with a psychiatrist. She said, yeah, you probably do have ADHD. Would you like to come back and talk to me next week about medication? And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, okay. But it was just like, all right, I've done that. And I come back and, you know, do the washing up or, you know, take one of the kids to some club or something. You know what I mean? So it was just like, it was just one of those things that happened. I was too busy at the time. And I think the kind of levels of meaning of what ADHD means and has meant to me and how difficult it's made some things and whereas other things it's made easier, and my creativity and energy may well come from ADHD, I think. So I'm still excavating in a sense what it all means. And it's never like the fact that I used to fight with my brother. Hello, Ben. He might well be listening, although he doesn't live in the UK anymore. The fact that I used to fight with him might be related to my ADHD a little bit but also our relationship with the rest of our family and our relationship with each other and, you know, how I felt about myself and how he felt about me, you know, all of those sorts of things. And the fact that I was, you know, I was like relatively golden boy and he was struggling. So, you know, all of those things happen. So I don't think you can ever come to terms. I find it difficult to know how I come to terms with my ADHD because it's sort of have I come to terms with myself. And I think, well, that's a work in progress and probably will always be a work in progress.
But that's the thing, isn't it, about life in general, I feel, is that, you know, every day we learn something more about ourselves. And I know for a fact that even from learning small parts about what ADHD actually is to today, I'm still learning relatively small things now, you know, like, yeah, for example, adjustments for myself that once worked for me at the beginning don't work as well now. And that could be anything from the light changes to giving myself a little bit of a break in between, you know, just before meetings, just after, just to, you know, recenter. So I really resonate with what you've said there as well. And you know, the hyperactive mind is just constant, isn't it? It's really constant. But once you're able to give yourself that forgiveness, it's really interesting. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was sort of, because you are obviously co-founder of ADHD UK. Mm. So after receiving your diagnosis, can you tell us a little bit about the journey of starting ADHD UK?
Well, again, I feel very much like a fraud because I was not very much the driving force of this. So I published a blog post initially, which then turned into an article in a pediatric journal called How I Found My Tribe, which at the time was quite an original title, but now everyone says it. But that's okay, fine. I didn't invent it, but I don't know of anyone who used it before me. I don't know. Anyway. And it was a blog post about me becoming becoming ADHD? No, that's not right. My transformation, yeah. like He-Man, whatever. That's a reference that you will get later in the year when the film comes out, but up until now you don't get. Anyway, that's right. Grow up on He-Man. So basically, Henry read it. We hadn't been in contact. I don't know that I'd seen Henry for nearly a decade, I think, at that point. We had been friends for a long time. So Henry and I went to school together. Any question? I will take questions on that to a degree. And we were friends then, and we sort of stayed in touch a bit after that, and then we sort of lost touch, as you would sometimes do. And he sort of, we went to a pub. I guided him to this pub. We both got quite lost and were quite late because the pub was much further away from London Bridge than I thought. But I thought that was a good omen that we kind of managed to get through that, and we had a nice chat. And he just said he wanted to do this, he wanted to help. He just had a diagnosis himself. And I mean, from that day, his commitment to this has been remarkable. And the work he's put in has been remarkable. And that's really where it started. We had a few meetings in pubs and cafes around South London, and came up with a name. He discovered it was free. We made the logo I've more or less just been a kind of, I don't know, eminence grise, I suppose. I am grey enough to be an eminence grise. But I've been a kind of sounding board for Henry throughout the process. But I think my main achievement in ADHD UK is that I'm still here. I'm still on the board.
Sometimes things start with an idea, and it's collaboration that pushes that idea forward as well. So the fact that you were able to come together and think about, because, you know, with every, I've just become a project manager, so I'm thinking from a project manager's perspective.
Okay.
Starting a project, there needs to be a business case. There needs to be a starting point. So the fact that you were able to develop that, you know, together, and Henry does work incredibly, incredibly hard, you know. He really, really does, and the fact that, you know, on the trustee board is a really big deal as well. I'm really proud of that, to be honest. I think I've told nearly everyone that I know. straight.
Well, you earned it. You worked really hard already, so there you go.
So, would you mind just explaining a little bit about sort of ADHD UK trustees and what that's like and how it's sort of expanded over the years, if that's okay?
I think the trustees, in a way, a good trustee should really not be noticeable. It's like a good chief of staff for the prime minister. No one should know who they are. And this is why it's a long time since we had a good chief of staff in number 10. Anyway.
that's one of the things, isn't it? To think about things from a different perspective. And our brains are great at that, I believe. I didn't know something. This isn't about ADHD. It's actually about dyslexia. But I heard about three-dimensional thinking. And it made me think about the way that ADHD brains work, and that some of us have obviously the hyperactive brain. So our brains go so fast that we can think quite literally outside of the box as well when it comes to things. And I think that for a trustee role is really important as well, because you're looking at things from all different perspectives. So, you know, you're a great chair of the trustees.
Yeah, well, we're trying. And anyway, this podcast is not just an advert for ADHD UK, although obviously please do, listeners, go to ADHD UK and make any donation you feel is appropriate. If, for instance, you have been an ADHD Science podcast listener for 25 episodes of high quality scientific content and you haven't given to the charity yet, now is your chance. Because it's all funded by the charity pays for the podcast hosting, so perhaps Tess and I have not really plugged it enough, but now is the time. Probably worth finishing up by talking about some of the things we have planned for the podcast, because it's not just going to be us talking about the charity every episode. So what are you thinking that we're going to do?
So one of the things that I'd love to bring to the ADHD UK podcast is our fantastic ambassadors. So we have over 100 ambassadors within the group, and it's forever expanding and forever growing. But that means that there's individual stories to be told. And for me, one of the things I think is really important is to raise have a point of raising awareness within ADHD UK. So the ambassadors will come onto the podcast and tell their stories from their individual perspectives and also around themes. So recently we've had a theme around intersectionality, which was really important. And I know that we've got some plan for the future. As well as that, we have a junior ambassadors program, and I know that they're very keen to be on a podcast as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that would be amazing. Okay. Well, definitely. All of that sounds brilliant. And I think that's the sort of lived experience sort of end of things. I don't think I've given up entirely on interviewing scientists. Or I haven't. I think I probably will do some scientist interviews just one-to-one and then bring them in to the podcast as recordings to just splice into podcast episodes. I think they'll probably be shorter and just asking people a little bit more about, more broadly about their work rather than about a specific paper. I think that was an interesting approach, but I think it's, unless you happen, well, you know, not many people are going to download the paper after they've listened to a podcast, because most people, let's face it, are doing, you know, listening to podcasts while they're just driving around or, you know, walking the dog or something. You're not going to download from Journal of Child Psychiatry and Psychiatry, Psychology and Psychiatry, while that's going on.
I know there's a lot of people that are interested in more ADHD science and podcast episodes, because I know some of the ambassadors have plugged them already into the chat previously and have listened to them themselves and found it really, really interesting.
Well, the idea has been to try and make that sort of thing accessible. So I just think we need to double down on that. And I think the other thing that is worth saying is that we do have access to quite a lot of experts now, because we've met quite a lot of people. So if listeners have any questions at all, oh, newsflash, we have an email address.
Lauren. Yes.
We have an email address. it's podcast@adhduk.co.uk. So that's podcast@adhduk.co.uk. So you can email us your questions. If you found this episode on social media, you can comment and answer any questions at all. And we've got access to just everyone, really, because I know some people, Henry knows people, so between us we can probably answer any question that you might have, and who knows, I might even know the answer, which is something that happens sometimes. So that's very important. And also suggestions. I think we need to be, you know, if people want us to go in a particular direction, just let us know what it is. And it's a new start. We're, you know, it's our first episode together, so we'll probably, you know, get to know each other, get comfortable, and maybe sort of go in a direction ourselves. I don't know. Talk about hats a lot. I don't know, something.
I'll try not to make too many jokes, because I'm not actually that funny.
I think you are quite funny. And I think you should feel free to make. I mean, I think what I do is I really show, by making all of the jokes I can possibly think of without having any filter particularly, I'm really sort of showing an. I'm being an example here. So therefore you shouldn't feel in any way kind of like you should be kind of censoring yourself, because I'm not sure I really do.
It gets to a point where there's no filter, you know. At first I'm like, oh yeah, and then all of a sudden it just goes. I think that's very similar for a lot of us, because we are able to then, you know, just be. And I think that that's really important.
Yeah, I don't think you go to an ADHD a podcast with two ADHD people looking for filtered conversation.
Exactly. You want to have that real, you know, depth of conversation and understanding, and this is exactly what this is for, you know, to talk about everything and anything. So listeners, yeah, Please send in your questions. No question is a silly question.
No, absolutely not. And I think that's the other thing. I think that's the thing that, I mean, I think we've sort of by circumstance have ended up making this change from ADHD science, but I think for me we're at such an important moment for ADHD, and we're getting these horrible articles written in all of the papers, and people from different political parties saying they'll take benefits away from people with ADHD, and it's overdiagnosed, and there's this whole kind of inquiry into whether we're overdiagnosing it. We're not. We know this, but fine. You know, it's a moment where, as a podcast and as an organization we've never stood by, but as a podcast, we just sort of, if we have any kind of platform, we shouldn't just be using it for saying, oh, here's a really interesting paper. We should be saying, this is what's happening for our community, and this is not right, and this is, you know, this is what we want.
I've always thought, you know, whenever I've seen an article about overdiagnosis, that it's not overdiagnosis, it's underrepresentation for far too long, you know. Mm. And now we are understanding more. That's why there has been an increase in people going for assessments, but now there is a halt with that. So the more we're able to be open, the further understanding, you know, we'll have. But I also wanted to just say, if anyone is listening and wants to find out any further information, you probably already do if you found our podcast, but there are support groups on ADHD UK's.
Oh, website. Yeah, very good point. Very, very a dizzying variety of support groups been set up, mostly online. But yeah, fantastic. It's one of the real strengths that we have and have from the very beginning, actually. Right, I think that just about wraps it up. I think a relatively short episode. So yes, please tell your friends, subscribe. I don't know, you know, do whatever you do. Review us on iTunes if you want. I don't know. do that. Do review us on whatever your podcast provider of choice is. So yeah, until next time, goodbye.